first, so let's see. But
you have like family in Ukraine?
Yeah, all my family is there. In the beginning, they came here and lived with me for 1 year, but then they decided to go back because it's also hard to live abroad, and they are old. They are not young people anymore, and they are attached to their house, of course. I have fights with them every day, but they say we stay home. But of course, if it gets like really, 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 because I'm from Odessa and Odessa, and it's lately it's shelled a lot, also a lot of missiles. But compared to other,
did they leave the stairs?
Yeah, so far we still have the stairs, fortunately. But the this how the haven, they shell it all the time, because also this grain, you know, this grain deal, which boats with the grain, they go from Odessa, so they try to destroy as much as possible, a strategy, blood strategy of Russia. But we are very grateful to Holland for this F-16. Thank you very much.
We
really need it.
Let's hope the next government is willing to help.
So I hope the good things will beat the bad things. Let's believe in it.
At least some of them always do. And some not yet, but they will come.
But we don't give up. So that's the most important. Ukrainian people, they have a strong spirit. So I think we will fight until the last day.
Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot to you too. Thank you.
You want to introduce yourself? Or I'm Hans.
Nice to meet you. I'm Lena.
Lena.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you for the interview. See you later then.
Thank
you.
This is from the radio? Or
Sure.
Oh, you have...
I have to. Navarro.
Give one away. True. You did
Thank you.
Job.
Thank you. Well.
Thank you.
Okay. See you later.
Thank you. See you later. Enjoy. Het gaat nu wel een beetje beginnen, dus ik ga snel. Nog even schakelen. We zijn nu ook live op de mixer van hier, dus we krijgen best wel aardig geluid, hoop ik. En ik denk dat hij zo gaat beginnen, dus ik ga lekker een stoeltje opzoeken en mijn heerlijke gebakje verder opeten. Veel plezier, lieve luisteraar.
Thank you. Тест-тест. Тест-тест. Алло, 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 алло.
Hi. One. Is it okay?
Yeah.
Sound is okay. Do you hear me all? Do you hear me? Stefanchik, you may take a seat here. Stefan. Okay, now everybody knows that you will be empty. We will wait Stefanchik from the toilet and we'll start. Meanwhile, can everybody who doesn't speak Ukraine raise hands just for me to understand? You doesn't speak Ukraine? Doesn't speak. Doesn't speak. Okay.
Nope, we didn't. I can pretend I don't.
Okay, 1 minute and we start.
Thank you.
house, Foundation Ukrainians in the Netherlands. There is a stand, there's QR code, you can make a donation for Ukraine and help this out. Also, you may use these links to donate to Stoosfest, things that they need, and you're welcome.
And you can make a donation in the wishing pole, the pole in front of the door. You can first make a wish, and then you put a coin or anything in the wishing
pole. It works. I saw that empty.
Put your wedding ring.
Okay. You will be rich, hopefully. Okay, so a few words about me. I'm Igor, I live in Amsterdam, and since last summer at Happy Bookman Place, I hold the Nomadis Book and Plan project, where I talk about Ukrainian culture in English language, spreading the word about Ukrainian culture, about classical music, about art, about literature, about nonfiction, about history, about everything, mostly around books that are available in English or Netherlands, and sometimes that are not available, and I just translate it and tell about it. Okay, now we will move to Stoos, and I would like to start with a very important intro.
Мелодия, ты же не тебя.
This song because first of all it's a soundtrack for the main theme for a documentary Yours Vasil, dedicated to Vasil Stus. And first of all it's a good piece. Palindrome is a very good musician nowadays in Ukraine. And first thing is that how Stus poetry may live in our nowadays lives, how he can talk to us via different manners of reading his verses, using his verses, feeling these verses. And I think Palindrome took a very good perception of the fate that Stus had and the will he had. And also to illustrate how hard to talk about Stus, especially for me, because who am I and who is Stus? But overall, despite the fear of miss something important, I will tell the things that are important for me in Stus and how I see his life and his heritage. As well as you may feel from this song, it's very hard to avoid mythologization or even creating an icon from Stus, despite the fact that he actually lived the life that actually leads to being an icon, because you will know about it later during this talk, because the scale of his personality, his strong position, fearlessness and acceptance makes Stus a perfect man to become an icon. And first of all, of course, he was a human being, but it's overshadowed by his fate. But first of all, he was a poet. By the way, this thing that I put on the background, first of all, for you not being bored with my talk, and the second, it's a very good movie, documentary about Vasil Stus, shot in 1992, considering his life, considering an interview with his cellmates, with his friends, with his family, and shooting all the background that was as close to his death, he died in 1985 as possible, because it was like the fall of Soviet Union and everything was the same. So it gives you an image of how it was at the time when he lived. And of course, mostly probably of you know that it was impossible to stay just human in USSR. Especially if you were from occupied republics, the choice was easy but harsh. You could be a speechless slave and collaborate with the regime, or be repressed eventually, despite the fact that 30s are past. And these repressions get back in 60s. And as you see, Stus died in 1985, so 5 years plus minus, and Soviet Union disappears. But overall, he died in a concentration camp. First of all, it tells something about the regime, but mostly it tells about the Stus, which avoided any compromises, any. And that's very important thing in his personality. Stus may be considered the main poet main Ukrainian poet overall of the second half of 20th century. But of course, in Soviet Union, real poetry was prohibited, and it was very hard to do it and to become to maintain poetry activities. So eventually, Stus became a dissident, part of a small but forceful movement for human rights. According to literature critic Yevgeny Stasinevich, Stus may be he considers that Stus comes next to Taras Shevchenko. He finishes the story Shevchenko started. They have the same ethical prescriptions, norms, and the image of a poet as a people mediator. Nevertheless, poetry of Stus, because Shevchenko was poet of Romanticism era, and he has this pathos and idea and like everything that you know about him. And Stus was, if not postmodern, then postmodern, but not postmodern era. Postmodern in Soviet Union era, yeah. His poetry does not consist agitation or something, anti-Soviet, anti-regime statements, or even he has no certain political agenda. It's a poetry of a European tradition based on human values, and like this great, great narrative, let's say this word, of being human, how to be human in different conditions, how to feel, how to live, etc. And of course he was a poet of Ukrainian, of European tradition, because he was well educated and formed by Western literature. He translated Goethe, Rilke, Paul Celan, Kipling, Giuseppe Ungaretti, Federico Garcia Lorca, Guy de Maupassant, Arthur Rimbaud, René Char, and many others. So he knew all this poetry, he felt it. Of course, he loved Beethoven a lot, and he listened to him while he was not repressed. I didn't get to the prison. One of his cellmates revises that I see an intelligent person of European culture with a Rilke's book in his arms. That is why his poetry, in a contrary to Shevchenko, is very complicated. It's not mass poetry, and he even did it in purpose, avoiding being like this mass poetry that was on that time in Ukrainian popular poets, with enormous attention towards their sounds and meanings. Recently there was a concert in Art Museum based on Svetoslav Lunyov music, which he wrote on verses of Ukrainian poets, and one of them were Stus poems. And this composer, Svetoslav Lunyov, I'm a friend of a pianist who performed it, and I heard their talk, and Lunyov explained that you need to pay attention to words themselves, not seeing them, not like try to make sound which does not consist in the words. So you need to just, everything in poetry that need to be there is actually in how words sound. So you shouldn't put much effort to read poetry, and this concerns especially Stus, because his words, they have, you see the energy that palindrome feels, and we will see other ways to read his poetry, and it like, it bumps you, I don't know, it pushes you the way it's written. Quoting Slavistan literary critic George Yuri Shevelyov, he was born in Kharkiv, and after Second World War he worked in Harvard University and Columbia University. I will quote it. Political programs is not something that was in the poetry of Vasily Stus. The point is to find yourself in a world of spies, secret agents, snitches. Finding yourself is finding a Ukrainian person. Personally, I am happy to see a commonality with Rilke only in the fact that both poets seek an image of human feelings and state it in their becoming and not in their completion. I will draw a parallel from fine art. Delacroix, followed by the epigons of Romanticism, roamed the world looking for unusual and often exotic themes. In contrast to them, for example, Claude Monet, we can find dozens of paintings that reproduce the same portal of the Rouen Cathedral, or going even further, to intensive painting the same haystack. Someone said about Brahms that he wrote one symphony all his life, formerly four of them. In a certain sense, Stus writes his own symphony in most of his poems. But Brahms, of course, was lucky not to live in USSR without being repressed, without his works being destroyed. So he got this this chance to do his work. And overall, poets are those that change the world view of people. They reflect time and become a conscious and a symbol. And a true poet, he expresses what others feel. Like a great poet, Stus had a low instinct for self-preservation. That's an important thing, and I think what defines a poet, because poet cannot build a good career, or then he's not a poet, because he always should be against everything. It's a dramatic role. It's a role of like drama. It's a role of actually becoming an icon. You can revise Rimbaud and Baudelaire and great poet. So now I will talk a bit about biography to illustrate this low level of self-preservation instinct. He was born on January 6, 1938, in a peasant family in Vinnytsia region. But 1 year after, his parents moved to Donetsk because to avoid collectivization, because at the time it was very, very harsh. Ukrainian historian Yaroslav Gritsak wrote that in Ukraine, traditional culture, which preserved in villages, saved this traditional Western Christianity, like Vertep. It's kind of a peasant theater based on biblical story. And these practices, they emerged from all the people that came from villages to cities during the Soviet period urbanization. And since most educated people were killed in the 30s, who lived in the city, these people from villages, new generation with something like core in it, they came and they very fast like gained the level of education, the level of knowledge, and continued somehow this their predecessors. He worked as teacher in Horlivka school, and he felt the catastrophe of Russification at the time because Donbas region was highly Russificated, and he wrote even a letter to a poet who was popular at the time, Malyshko, about the dramatic situation that Ukrainian language is disappearing. Then he had military service, and what's important, most people start writing verses, poems in teenagership, and it's okay, it's normally, but it passes then, or not passes, sometimes it's even
almost
a problem.
Valentine. Huh? It's almost Valentine.
Yeah. But he starts to write poems during military service. Then he gets back and he works as a journalist. He entered a doctoral program at the Shevchenko Institute of Literature. At the same time, he published some of his selected verses in some magazines. It was the first and last publication of his works ever in Ukraine, in Ukrainian language. He married Valentina Popeliuk, sometimes you may see her here, and his son Dmytro was born in 1966. On September 4th, 1965, during the premiere of Sergei Parajanov, and Sergei Parajanov is Russified name, the real name of Sergei Parajanov is Sarkis Parajanian, because he was Armenian, raised in Georgia, so he was not Sergei at all. On the premiere of his film Shadows of Forgotten Ancestors, probably not all Ukrainians know this movie, but probably not only Ukrainians know about this movie. It was premiered in Ukraine, but a year before it was premiered in the West, and it gained success. And after 1 year, it got premiered in the country it was shooted. It like Soviet reality. A few people, Ivan Dzhuba and Vyacheslav Chernobyl, future dissidents, they wanted to use this opportunity of presentation of this film to tell about repressions about Ukrainian intelligentsia that started like 1 year, just recently started. So they had a conspiracy, let's say. They agreed that they will go on the stage and tell like, repression started, let's protest, let's do something. They did it. Stus wasn't aware of this episode. He didn't know that it was planned, and they told about this. Of course, KGB agents that were in each second chair, they reacted, tried to make a sound. Some organizers of the event switch on the air ray, I don't know, siren, to shut it down. But Vasil Stus was one of them who raised as a protest against the repression. Of course, there was another, KGB agent, who wrote down everyone who stand up. And it was the beginning of his dramatic way, because before it was everything okay. He was very well educated. He was on his doctorate program, huge career and good life was ahead. But he wasn't able to bear this kind of injustice. He was the person who was who couldn't stand injustice overall, and he was 27, the age when like all this club 27 people, all these musicians, you know, they died this age, and it was the level when you are boiled, when you want to like influence, when you are on the peak. And of course he did it, and actually he chose the road to actually where he finished. As the result, this very at the end of September, he lost his job. He was fired. He was fired from institute. He was fired from his doctorate. He wasn't able to finish his work, and he got to work on a building site, fireman, engineer, continuing his intensive work on poetry. He submitted a couple of books for publishing, but they got rejected because it was not like pro USSR, etc. And the main point that he was in the list of the people that couldn't publish books in Soviet Union. In 1970, his book, one of his book, was published in London, and that caused, of course, problems for Stus, because it was like a crime to have your book published abroad. So a few years later, in 1972, he was arrested for anti-Soviet agitation and propaganda. He was sentenced to 5 years in concentration camp and 3 years of exile in Magadan Oblast. What's interesting, that first term he get as a poet, because this book wrote 2019, I think, by Kipiani, a researcher of Ukrainian Samizdat and a journalist. And here you can see the all the protocols of KGB documents considering Stus' case, because in Ukraine archives are opened, in Russian Federation they are not. That's why a lot of documents, they are still not available to understand what happened, and most important, how he died. And is this documents I wrote the I've read analysis, like literary critics analyzed for KGB his verses, and there was taste like, these are harmful, these are decadent, they are not optimistic enough, and this is like okay, it's like it's okay. Most of them, it's ridiculous, but anyway, they kind of was from the low side, but overall it was very ridiculous. So now a bit about generation of 60s. There is a term 60 years, or 60-tnikyy in Ukrainian. It's a generation, term itself is very complicated, because you cannot define and you cannot properly tell what is the what does it mean and who you can include to it. But what's important in their worldview was that it was a time of Khrushchev Tsao, or Vidliga, when Stalin died and his personality cult was denounced, and people start believe that now, like, it can be normal, it can be promised future may become. And sure, most of them wanted what that can be called like socialism with a human face. They were not anti-Soviet, they just want to make it like a better place to live, because of course they were like Soviet people with a certain level of views. Of course, they frustrated very soon, and despite writers of 60s having thin connections with the generation of executed and killed, repressed writers from 20s, 30s, they were their successors by spirit, and they read their books. As an example, you may use Nikola Zerov, who was very well-educated, so-called neoclassicism author of 1920s, 1930s, and his verses, his poems were transferred by the Samizdat infrastructure. Overall, in 2014, there is a very interesting and very fruitful discussion about how to commemorate and how to treat Ukrainian culture heritage from Soviet Union period, because it's what's hard to separate ideology from real art, from architecture, from literature as well. But I think this discussion led to a pretty clear positions, and that's why we have a very good movement on preserving heritage that is really meaningful. So getting back to these 60s and to a group which Stus was part of, actually what happened were small groups of close friends who spent time together, who understood each other, they share their inspiration of the literature, they share their thoughts, they read poems to each other, as Stus in one verse named there, "My late Aets." It's from Homer. I cannot explain what Aets, but sounds Greek enough. They were trying to prevent repressions from 1930s, because of course they were aware, and if you probably know, after Stalin's death, there was a process of rehabilitation. Not all of them were rehabilitated, because like Mykola Khvilevy, one of the greatest poets, was rehabilitated only in the late 80s, but overall they knew about it, and they were they believed that they can avoid the new level of repressions are in the past. But now they choose a way to oppose it legally. And as a human rights movement. And that's how they became dissidents. The circle was not anti-Soviet, as I told you, and not nationalist at all. It was even technically impossible. Most of them were from eastern part of Ukraine, and connections with people who were nationalist was very, very thin, because most of them were in Soviet concentration camps, by the way, almost ruined them because of their rioting, and helped the new generations of political prisoners, because before they frightened these criminal prisoners, because criminal prisoners were used as a tool for frightening these political prisoners, and they did riots, and so new generations of political prisoners were pretty safe because criminals afraid of them. Even about nationalism, I can remind you, if you don't know, like Russian, they misuse every word. So if they put like nationalist, actually it's or fascist or Nazi or whatever, it just literally means enemy. And because even Sergei Parajanov was sentenced for Ukrainian nationalism. So Georgian Armenian guy was. Was a nationalist, and also he had two reasons to get to prison. First is homosexuality, second is nationalism. The way it was. After first imprisonment, all of them, all these dissidents, they became anti-Soviet, because they understood everything, and they wanted to, of course, fight till the end, because they had nothing to lose. And human rights, of course, it was a crime for the Soviet Union. That's why from 60s to... these circles, they not only opposed, and they didn't just perform this human rights movement, trying to save people, try to fight for these rights. They also created what is called, may be called, high culture. Literature, sometimes movies, literature critics, etc. Because in USSR only folk based on social realism standards was allowed in occupied republics. It was not real folk music, which is now getting back, and you can hear a lot of interesting projects. Of course, they couldn't bear it, and they wanted to create something like really cultural and really like high. That's why from 1960s Stus told that we should consider them ourselves aristocrats, not just folk people, but aristocrats. And he wrote a verse called Evolution of a Poet. I translated it via Google Translation, translation, but overall I think the meaning is still the same. A genius poet bifurcated on himself and fear. The semi-poet split into two, for a quarter poet and fear. The quarter poet split into two, in 1/8 and a fear. A poet's 1/8 split into two, on smell and fear. Now, as he passed down the street, above his head, white smoke hung, and the opposite ones are frightened, respectfully stepped on his way. Yeah, that's... So actually he wrote like he described perfectly how it happened, how it looked like to be a poet in a totalitarian regime. After first sentence he got back to Kiev. He had only 9 months before the second imprisonment. When he got to concentration camp for the first time, his son Dmitro was only 2, and when he got back he was almost 13. He was a teenager, and of course for him it was hard to set relationship with a father who he didn't know, plus teenagership. He blamed father for drop them, and it was like harsh even from this point of view. In Kiev, Tus revises, I learned that people close to Helsinki group were being repressed in the most fragrant manner. This is the least had been the case on the trials of Ovsienko, Horbal, Litvin, and they were soon to deal similarly with Chernobyl and Rozumny. I didn't want to that kind of Kiev. So what was the Helsinki group? At that time, USSR signed the Helsinki Human Rights Agreement, and they became a part of this agreement, and they got to do something with human rights itself. But the problem was that this group that created this Ukrainian Helsinki group, they created to use this tool to save people within USSR, they were repressed. So first group that entered this Helsinki group was repressed. Second was repressed. And when Stus just wanted to enter it, he knew that he will be repressed. It was like obvious for all of them. And of course, he was not just a fighter, he was also pretty ironic. He had a sense of humor. And one of his friends asked, like, why did you do it? Don't you know you will be repressed? And he told, well, you know, an old lady asked me, I couldn't refuse. So, of course, as Oksana Zabushka wrote in her late book, My Last Journey. My Longest Journey, about her father, because her father was repressed, and she told that it was very scary for all repressed people to get the second term, because for most of them, second term was the last one. People got died or broke under pressure. And so that happened to Stus. So if first sentence he got as a poet, second he got as a dissident. In prior to Olympic Games in Moscow in 1980, there were a lot of activities from regime to clear up country from elements that can be not look like pretty good. In Moscow it was harsh, like people with disabilities, with not homeless but like alcoholic, they just like removed totally from the streets. He was arrested and received a 10-year sentence for anti-Soviet activity plus 5 years of exile. So if he would survive, he'd get out from this imprisonership in 1995. What's important and interesting in it that government put an advocate to protect him as Medvedchuk. Medvedchuk later became an pretty influential Ukrainian politic. But it was also obvious that he was a KGB agent from Soviet period, because it was super obvious, plus there are documents. And he was kind of got to protect. Stus wanted to refuse to use this advocate, but he was allowed to refuse. And Medvedchuk did nothing actually to protect him, and actually his As the result, Stus get the maximum term possible in this case. In October 2020, when this book probably was published, it was published in 2019. In 2020, Medvedchuk put to this author of this book trial about something that he was not right in this book, and actually there was a thing that literally told like the servant of Soviet regime, Medvedchuk, and Shistka, who understands Ukrainian, it's more precise, I don't know prison words in English, unfortunately, or not unfortunately, yeah. And Medvedchuk, there was a trial, it was very loud, of course, and eventually Medvedchuk lost, he got to pay a fine. And also, he promoted this book very well, and they got to make another thousand of books, and it was so. Thank you, Medvedchuk, at least for something. Of course, Medvedchuk during the full-scale invasion, he tried to run away, but he got caught, and then he got exchanged to Ukrainian militaries, and now he is in Moscow because he is like a KGB agent, and plus he is close to Putin. There are a lot of people who visited the places of Vasil Stus imprisonment, and one of them revises that afterwards he was in the camera when Vasil Stus died, and he told like I was close there just for experiment for 15 minutes, and he told like I couldn't like even I wanted to escape from them because it's super scary. As hell. So Stus, during the second imprisonment, he was no right to write his own poems. He wrote almost 400, or we don't know how many verses he wrote, and all of them were destroyed. Only six managed to get out from prisons, from some things people transferred, but mostly people remembered his verses. Sometimes Armenian, Lithuanian, Jewish people, they revised his verses, and then like published it. At the beginning of this movie, one of the prisoners who was in the same prison as Vasil Stus, he makes an excursion for the group and for the shooting group, and he finds here I hided the Kipling's translation by Vasil Stus, and he like puts them out. I don't know, maybe it's it was a fake, but it looks like the thing, and. He got a lot of isolation. He got to isolation. It's kind of a karzer called for attempt to transfer verses from camp, and even translations were destroyed. Last another Rilke, a lot of Rilke in my talk. He translated Rilke for 1.5 years, and he told like if you don't let me write my own verses, then maybe I can translate Rilke. He worked on these translations. And they took them and destroyed. And probably this was the thing that put him to mental breakdown. He totally he passed. He was very sick. He had only 1/3 of his stomach because of the operation, and he was very. He had a lot of troubles with heart. So he was very. Things that are important that. When his wife and the son managed to come to him, he screamed on his wife, like, why did you let to humiliate you? Because there are a process of inspection, which was very humiliating, especially for women. And he told, like, why did you let them humiliate you? Because I'm here for avoid being humiliated at all. And that was the thing, that mission that he saw. And another thing that people that was with him in this concentration camp told that at the late period, the only condition for him to get back to stop being prisoner is to write, promise, stop opposing to the regime. It was pretty simple. But he refused it because he understood that it would be, he should went to the age. And he did it, of course. There is also a very interesting myth about Nobel Prize, which he was almost get. But the problem is that Nobel Prize do not openly communicate what candidates do they have. But there are some committees that promote people for getting Nobel Prize. There was, in fact, a committee that wanted to promote Stus to Nobel Prize, and to tell the truth, Stus was the author that deserves a Nobel Prize. And the case was not like even artistic thing, but they wanted to save him because there was a situation with Nazi regime. Was promoted to Nobel Prize, and they hoped that Hitler will set him free. Yeah, but Hitler was the guy that put him in the hospital, and he died in hospital. So anyway, he didn't save, but at least it was a chance. So to brotherhood, to Soviet regime, Nazi regime, they wanted, they thought that it will work the same, and they tried to save Stus. So probably it wouldn't have happened, but it could happen. And last thing is Rebori process, because by Soviet laws, prisoners that die in concentration camps, they get to bury at that very place when they died. But as Stus writing was one of his verses, and Palindrome did it, he wrote that we will die, but the movement will stay. And on November 19th, 1989, the remains of Vasil Stus, Alexa Tichy, and Yuri Litvin, who also died in this concentration camp, were brought back to Kyiv and reburied in Baikove Cemetery. The ceremony attended is more than 30,000 people. They brought Ukrainian flags, which was impossible for Soviet regime, and they passed through the KGB building, and KGB agents, like, they watched and they understood that it's the end, they cannot manage it, they cannot repress so much people. And there were also one black and red flag from Ternopil. And what's the most impressive thing is that in 1990s, the Supreme Court of the Soviet Union canceled Stus' verdict, and the case was closed due to the lack of evidence. That's a perfect end of this thing. And another comparison with Shevchenko, process of burying of Shevchenko was people wrote that it was kind of a burying of a king, because Shevchenko, you know, the level which Shevchenko had. And it was something like, which was similar to Vasil Stus as well, because it was something that he, it was almost like biblical story when what he as a Christian martyr, he put his cross, he put it to the edge, to the end, and then a lot of people he impressed, and it probably he was the one of the reasons why Soviet Union falls, because Ukraine was one of the first republic who escaped it. And also his last address was at Chernobyl Street, and that's another symbolic thing, because a lot of historians, Sergei Plahy, Yaroslav Ritsak, they consider that Chernobyl was one of the important things that led to escape Ukraine from Soviet Union, because it was led by Soviets. That's all for biographical side. Thank you. Now we can have intermission. You can go to toilet. You can go to the bar. Cash is better for the bar, but if you have no cash, you may use a PIN. Let's see. You're in 10 minutes. No.
geen fluisteraar. Dus we moesten even schakelen. Nou, dit was een heel verhaal over visies. Ik moest even pauze. Ja. Zo. Ja, die lichten die zitten een beetje in de weg.
Zit daar vast.
Ja, maar jij weet niet wat er
allemaal uitgaat.
Jij weet niet wat er allemaal uitgaat.
Heel kort op de zonnestroom.
Er gaat een beamer uit namelijk.
Kijk, ja, dat bedoel ik. Ja, dat zal niet de eerste keer zijn. Oh, wil jij een liedje zingen? Nee? Ja, jammer. Nou, dat was een tientje die was een liedje aan het zingen. Nou wil ik eigenlijk even... sorry, lieve luisteraar, geen drugs op de radio. Perfect moment om even te praten natuurlijk. Misschien zijn er nog... buiten rokers die wat te vertellen hebben.
Station Zaan,
ja.
Richting Station
Zaan. Hallo.
Hoi.
We zijn live op Radio Paterboel.
Oh, wat leuk.
Ja,
is het, je bent live?
Ja.
Oké. Okay. Gek.
Ik ben een beetje nieuwsgierig, want ik zag jouw foto's maken... de andere kant op, zullen we zeggen.
Ja, ja. Altijd tegen de stroom in, ja. Natuurlijk. Altijd de onderkant zoeken en de tegenkant. En het contrast. En de mensen.
Vergeef mij de associatie, maar het zag er echt uit alsof je alle gezichten wilde fotograferen of zo.
Nou, er zitten heel veel mensen in het publiek. Het lijkt me leuk voor de mensen die het georganiseerd hebben dat ik ze kan opsturen. Mm-hmm. Te kijken wie er waren, hoeveel mensen er waren, of ze geïnteresseerde gezichten hadden. Dat zullen we later op de foto terugzien.
Ja.
Ik ben fotograaf, dus ik doe dit. Ik vind het interessant. Ik vroeg net aan een van de Oekraïners of de dichter ook aanwezig was.
Ja.
En dan is het zo pijnlijk
dat hij in 1985.
Zij zeiden 58, maar het blijkt is 85. 80. En ik dacht dat hij aanwezig zou zijn.
In gevangenschap in een concentratiekamp.
Ja, het is een soort Nassim Hikmet-achtig verhaal.
Wat voor verhaal?
Nassim Hikmet.
Oh. Tell me all about it. Ja, ik heb geen idee. Ik weet niks.
Een Turkse dichter.
Oh.
Zijn lot lijkt daar een beetje op. Vind ik. En ook zijn taal. Maar daar kom ik niet... Ik moet nog eens achter boeken aan. Ik heb nog geen vertalingen gelezen.
Ja.
Maar ik ben hier ook om steun te brengen. Om er gewoon door er gewoon te zijn.
Nou, hartstikke goed. Ja.
Dat is het eigenlijk.
Ik ook, eigenlijk.
Ja.
Maar doe je dat vaker dan? Gewoon ergens naar binnen lopen of zo? Of met wc?
Qua
fotograferen. Ik heb het gevoel dat jij gewoon naar binnen loopt en gewoon een beetje foto's.
Nou, ik kom hier wel vaker in het Vrijpaleis, maar meestal om kunst te kijken. En ik ken Stefan, de boekieman.
Ja,
die woont op de Herengracht achter mij.
Ja.
En ik zei...
Dat is 167, toch?
Oh, ja, maar zijn nummer weet ik niet uit mijn hoofd.
Oh.
Maar mijn eigen nummer
is wel belangrijk voor de lieve luisteraar.
Moet zo nog naar huis. Dus.
Nou maar onze lieve luisteraar die wil weten waar dan iedere dinsdag dat zich afspeelt natuurlijk.
Ja, nou,
want hij doet elke dinsdag toch?
Ja, maar hij heeft ook bij op de Herengracht sessies met gedichten voorlezen, schilderen.
Ja.
Hij heeft
elke
een
week.
hele pro.